from Tacker Boys Radio. You're listening to us on April the 29th of 2008.
And a half. Stream it up your ass.
Yes. Right, it's been a while since the last episode of Hacker Voice Radio. In fact, it's been a few months since we did anything.
Way too long.
This was due to a couple of reasons. One of the reasons were because we were taking a season break, as we usually do between seasons. We take about a couple of weeks now, as well as coupled with the fact that pretty much all of us, including Naxter, myself, all the other people like Hyper, Blue Chimp, were really, really busy with real life stuff, which doesn't tend to help when you try and do other projects or whatever, and especially as Hacker Voice Radio, people might not understand how time consuming it can be. I mean, obviously we've done this for a long while now, we've got quite a lot of shows out, and to set something up can be reasonably quick, but when you have problems, when you have issues, when you want to plan something, you know, it can take maybe half an hour prior and maybe an hour after the show that we actually have to dedicate. So that's about 2 hours and a half out of, you know, a late evening or afternoon that we have to do. But whatever, you know, whenever we get around to it, because after all, you don't have to pay to listen to these shows. We do it out of the
Out
of the goodness of our hearts, as Naxter just pointed out. So since we've been off air, there has been a number of developments within the hacking climate community. InfoSec has been and gone last week.
Last week.
So we want to do like a little report on that. Also, I want to, go into a couple of things that we might want to do for Hacker Voice Radio, the magazine, pimp that out a bit more, and stuff like that. But before we go into that, anything you want to update us all about?
Yeah, I guess so. What so far as the HV type things go?
Whatever. You seemed like you wanted to talk about a few things on the phone, so.
Yeah. Well, I was going to go into a bunch of different stuff, but I think we'll do that afterwards. But okay. I suppose I better say that I'm in the process of getting the website redeveloped somehow or another for Hacker Voice. And it's going to change a bit, probably, to reflect the fact that we would like to do or have more than one podcast running. We're going to change the site, so we could have a radio.hackervoice.co.uk site, which is separate from the main initial site. And the initial site will be basically a sort of hub with links to all of the different things that we do, because if you look at the site at the moment, you wouldn't know we do half the things that we do. You do have to dig quite a lot to find things, and some things are just hidden on the front page, and like you wouldn't know we did a magazine until you scrolled about halfway down the front page, and the front page is pretty big. And also you probably, well, you'd know we've had the IRC channel because that's right at the top, I think. I don't know.
Yes, it is. Ooh, but you'd have to click on IRC to then go into it and all this kind of stuff, yeah.
Yeah, you wouldn't actually know what was going on.
Sure.
So far as that. And just making it generally more accessible and cool and awesome for everything.
Yeah, we really want to kind of like, you know, we had a discussion, me and Naxter, and the site upgrade is a project that was a long-term kind of thing, and we've been thinking about it for a while. I think at the beginning of last year or the end of last year, we did a coding redesign of the back end of the site to basically make it as close to a custom CMS as we could get. I mean, all the code is custom. It's not like we've taken from something and then, you know, implemented that. Which is what we kind of want to do, is make it original, make it to you know, perfectly suit our needs of what we require for a site to do. We also want to streamline the site so that it's continuous and it's consistent throughout all of our websites, because we do have a few. We don't have millions, but we do have a few.
We have about five.
Yeah, we have a few.
Six, maybe?
Yeah, we have a fair few different things that we have out there. And throughout those different sections, we'd like to have a... not so much a branding, but a consistency within the feel or the theme of the site.
We regret to announce...
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, so, you know, that's what we'd like to do, make it a little bit more accessible for people, make it easier for us to manage, because that's kind of the most important thing as well. Make it flexible, because we constantly change, you know, with the kind of stuff that we do, and, you know, maybe the radio show might expand, maybe this or that might expand, so we'd like to be able to facilitate those kind of things as well. So, you know, over the next few months... you may notice some changes to the website. If you wish to kind of get involved in maybe some of the kind of feedback stuff, then please speak to either one of us on IRC, and we'd be more than happy to, you know, show you a link to where the development site is, and maybe if you can say, well, you know, that looks okay, but it might be better if you put this there, or I don't like the color, or it clashes with this or that. And we know that it works really, really badly in IE6. it fails, but...
IE6 fails anyway,
yeah,
so...
So, you know, we're not too worried about that. I'm not sure what we could do about that, but whatever. I'm sure we could put some sort of browser detection or something in there, and if it sees it's a Microsoft browser, then it just goes, what the fuck are you doing, and gives you a link to Firefox or something like that. So, yeah, we could do that. yeah, so anything else?
Don't know. Don't think so. Nothing particularly that I can think of right now.
Okay. Well, I was thinking along the lines of kind of like the stuff that Blue Chimp likes to do, a lot of kind of radio freaking and stuff like that. And me and Blue Chimp recently met up. I went down to his house, and we had quite a lot of fun with Rems as well. Shouts out to him. And I was thinking, you know, getting people a little bit more interested, those who might not care about it, into kind of like how telephones work and radio freaking and all that stuff, I thought I'd do a little competition. It's going to be really simple, and hopefully we might be able to pull it off over the radio show. I don't know how it's going to work with the whole kind of MP3 encoding and all that kind of shit, but hopefully it should work okay. I'm gonna play a couple of DTMF numbers down the phone line, down the microphone, through from a tone dialer that Ionix gave to me, and I'd like for people to try and just see if they're able to decode that DTMF, and if they do, then I don't know, they can get a free shell server from me or something like that. So we'll try that.
Shell server?
Yeah, whatever. I don't care. Well, it's really cheap. It's £7 a year or something like that. So anyway, I'm going to try this now. I'm going to mute the background music so obviously it doesn't clash with the tones.
And me too.
Yeah, well, I'm not going to mute you, but just be quiet, I guess. All right, let's try this. Let's see how this works. It might just fail because of... But we'll do it anyway. Here we go. And that was it.
Oh, come on. Even I can decode that in my head.
I know, but, you know, it might just get people going a little bit. And those who can't, you know, that's the thing, is it's not really aimed at you, Naxter. I'm sorry, but this, you know, it excludes Hacker Voice family members and...
Damn!
Yeah. You know, so we'll see. Actually, I might pop myself into IRC just so I can see if there's any kind of discussion about what we're talking about, so we can get that whole...
Well, in that case,
real-time
Muff Attack can't win it because he is my father.
Right. Oh, dear.
That should get a reaction.
Yes.
Well, might do.
If he's listening. What else? yeah, I mean, I was going to talk about kind of an interesting kind of thing that I've been... Well, it's not really interesting, but it's something that I've been contemplating recently, is, you know, mainly understanding like protocols. One of the things that I want to get kind of like a listener discussion going on about is SMTP in particular. Now, the reason for that is that SMTP has been around for a long while, and if you Google, you can find some RFCs on it and read up on how the protocol works and the standards and all that kind of stuff. And just about anything really has some sort of capability to be able to send mail. You know, PHP and all this kind of stuff has built-in SMTP capabilities. One of the things that really is an emerging kind of thing, not really emerging, but it's been there for a while, is the abuse of SMTP, such as spam and stuff like that. And things have come up to protect that, such as spam filters.
Spam assassins
and stuff like that, and the analysis of spam and stuff like that. Stuff like... Message Labs tries to do to stop it, and the analysis of pictures within spam and the content of spam messages and stuff like that. And another thing that's quite interesting is SPF records as well. Sender preferred relays or records, I think that's what it stands for, that are basically what it is it's a DNS entry in your domain. Which states which gateways are allowed to send email for that domain. So, for instance, if like I was sending an email from Naxter@hackervoice.co.uk, and I sent it from my little spam bot, 1,000 Viagra emails from Naxter. A mail server would then go, right, I'm going to check the DNS record for that domain, which is what they usually do, and then check for an SPF record. And if that originating IP address is not in that SPF record, it'll go, no, I don't think so. I'm not going to allow this to relay. So, that's one of the things I also wanted to kind of discuss, maybe security issues or implications of that, and other stuff like that. And another kind of thing I wanted to go into, maybe for a Tech Tuesday, is kind of DNS, the wonders of it and some of the flaws of DNS. And finally, the kind of thing that's been going through my head is software design in relation to software that calls back home. Shush. My dog's just going crazy. So, like, if you have a piece of software and then it goes, oh, I want to check for updates. I want to check.
Shut up, Missy.
Shush. Obviously seen something outside. Shut up! That's terribly professional of me, obviously. We have a dog in the studio. Like a piece of software would go, right, okay, I want to go off and check some updates. I want to go off and check if I've got... if I'm validated, if I'm activated, and how software actually goes off there. Why do companies code certain things in there, and do they have any kind of fail-safe where software is put in place, or networks where maybe that might not be allowed, where you might not be allowed to have these kind of things going out there and willy-nilly going off and picking stuff up, where these kind of software updates aren't maybe documented within the software itself. Like, okay, this software will go off and it will say, it will try and talk to these servers on this port, and it will do this at this time. And most software, I don't know, maybe you can prove me wrong, but most software doesn't tell you that it will do that specifically and specify where it's going to, what it's going to be doing. So that might be an interesting discussion as well. So it's just kind of those kind of points that maybe we can have something to chew over for the next, the next season maybe, or the next few shows. Don't know how we're going to do this. Maybe hopefully get some rhythm back into HVR and do it once a week at a certain time. And I know me and Exter spoke about this before, kind of working out what kind of sustainable schedule we could have for you guys to be able to say, right, okay, I know that Hacker Voice Radio won't be every week, won't be every 3 or 4 days, but maybe it will be once a week, twice a week at this time or whatever, so we can get that back in action. Because I know that there are still listeners out there. You know, I do check our stats, and there are people who still do listen, check the RSS feed and check all this kind of stuff. And now my computer's completely crashed, which is fucking great.
Yeah, what computer?
The one that I'm talking to you on. But it's still working.
Clearly it's working, because I can still hear you.
Yeah, but it's completely died, as in I can't move the mouse and the music stopped playing. So we'll just have to carry on like that. Fantastic. So now I have absolutely no way of being able to pull up web pages or whatever, because it's just completely frozen. It needs a rebuild. It really does.
Oops.
I don't know what it is. Because over the last couple of days... my girlfriend's noticed that it just crashes, like that you can't move the mouse, and the actual, you know, you press numlock and you press caps lock and it doesn't light up, so it's like the operating system's kind of frozen, but obviously it hasn't because I'm talking to you, so it's doing something in the background.
Really?
Which is the most bizarre thing ever. So I'll have to investigate.
Are you running Firefox by any chance?
Firefox isn't actually running at the moment.
Ah, that's weird. I had some of those problems with Firefox running.
Yeah.
Also, I had some problems with CPU monitor,
right,
which used to like to freeze up my machine, which is quite ironic, really.
What, you mean the little thing, which the system monitor that you have at the toolbar
yeah.
on the top? Right,
yeah.
Okay, that is running, but it's never been a problem for me before. So I'll have to think, I'll have to look into that. Anyway, I mean, we'll just carry on. As long as I can talk to you, that's fine. I don't really need to have the screen... Yeah, I don't really need to clink stuff because it's kind of a distraction. Anyway.
yes.
Yeah. Talking about computers and specifically Ubuntu, which is what's running on here, it's the older version of Ubuntu, so it's pre-Gutsy Gibbon. It's now... What is it? It's something Heron now.
The hoary... Hermaphrodite or
yes,
something over there.
Yeah. It's the 8.4 version. Which is what I've currently running on my laptop. And I have to say, it's really fucking good. I upgraded, straight upgrade from the previous version to this. And I really, really like it. It's you can definitely see the changes. Where maybe previous versions, it's like, oh, well, what have they actually done? What's special about this, you know? Okay, fine, you've got compeers and stuff like that, and a little bit of kind of like teasers of what previous or of what next versions might be like. But this one's really kind of solid. They've really done their groundwork. They've got Firefox 3 beta on there, which looks really good. It works really well as well, apart from it freezing up from time to time, and I can kind of understand that being a beta and maybe not so happy about very flash heavy, very kind of web 2.0 pages, which are really kind of, I don't know, intensive kind of stuff that might freeze up.
2.0!
Yeah. So, I don't know if you've ever had a chance to play around with it, but my initial impressions of messing around with it, it's much more stable. It uses up a little bit less processes than the previous version. It uses up less resources than the previous version. It looks really good. It's very kind of slimline. It's very... very well designed.
I might have a look at Ubuntu at some point in the near future, but to be honest, I've just been running Debian, straight Debian, just because I like it better, mainly.
Yeah,
Etch has been very nice, and Lenny is pretty good too. So.
Yeah, I mean, they're very stable. It's a very stable operating system, very flexible. You know, I like Debian, but I prefer Ubuntu, if that makes any sense, because it's got a lot more stuff as a desktop operating system, mind.
As a desktop, I can kind of understand Ubuntu being better, well, possibly better, because they've done more testing into getting more stuff supported and things working properly than the base Debian distro where they basically make the base of it really stable and rock solid, but they don't particularly make individual packages work properly. Well, they do, but not as much as they do in Ubuntu, as far as I know anyway.
Yeah, that's right. Okay. You know, I mean, Ubuntu's really shut off as a Linux distribution. It has taken on so quickly, which is really good to see. You know, the user base has expanded tremendously compared to any other operating system, compared to, I don't know, Debian, compared to Gentoo and all these other kind of random things. And I think that's a really good thing. And I've heard of people, you know, asking, oh, I'm gonna go down that path and I'm gonna install Ubuntu. Any kind of recommendations, this and that? And I'm like, well, to be honest, I don't think you'll have too many problems, because it will run pretty much any kind of hardware. I've never seen Ubuntu complain about much, apart from, you know, some Dell machines, which are really, Dell is just horrible for hardware sometimes, and especially Red Hat. Red Hat just despises all these kind of BIOS and all this kind of, you know, pseudo SCSI disk controllers and all this kind of shit. It just goes, well, you know what? Well,
fake raids.
Exactly. Ugh. If you're not going to fucking give me a proper controller to read disks from, then I'm not going to fucking work for you. So that's basically how that goes down. And another thing that I really hate about Red Hat is the fact that dismissing the fact that the operating system isn't as good as it could be, but the fact that you have to fucking download either a DVD, which is like 3.2 gigs or something like that, or you have to download 6 or 7 bloody CDs. Oh my God, the computer's just come back to life. Wow, that is incredible. I wonder what it was doing. It's just opened up a...
It sounds like X was just hogging
shit.
Yeah,
I think so. It just opened up like a gazillion trash can things. That is just bizarre.
Interesting.
Yeah, that is really weird. Anyway, good news. My computer's come back to life.
By the way, news just in. Apparently, unfortunately, we're not going to have a spring edition of the magazine. Oh.
Oh dear. Why is that?
But don't know. Presumably, they've just not really finished it.
Yeah, no, it's not. Complete,
however.
No.
However. There will be a summer edition, and it will have all the stuff that they didn't quite finish for the spring edition in one huge, massive magazine.
That's fantastic. That's really good news. And that's it. This is another thing I want to talk about in this kind of catch-up show, was the magazine. It's still there. It's still in production. You know, I want to get back into doing that a little bit more. Maybe I'll be able to organize my time a little bit more to be able to punch out some articles and do some of that, because, you know, it's good. And if you guys have any, don't question, oh, will it be good enough, or when is it going to be out? Just once you've done your article, once you're happy with it, once you've read over it a couple of times, you know, send it in to articles@hackervoice.co.uk, and we'll have a read through it, and we'll basically feedback to you if we don't think it's good enough, which is kind of unlikely, because the articles that we have had in have been really good, and we would be proud to publish all of them. There's only been a few that we've not thought, well, you know, this has been done before, basically, and it's not really worth going into a magazine, because it's, if you Google it, then it'll be Google, you know. So not saying that all of our articles are 100% genuine. Well, not genuine, I mean unique. You know, I'm sure that they cross-reference some other things, because that's how fast, you know, the information technology world works. You know, you could come up with a zero-day exploit, but so could somebody else the same day, you know, and then release it. And it's like, oh no, how did you do that? Well, obviously, because there's a million people working on the same fucking thing as you, you know, at any one time. You don't know what will happen. I'm really proud of the fact that we've been able to do this, and I've got a stack of the magazines on my desk right now, ready to go down to 2600 on Friday, which I'm going to be giving to somebody as they are his. It's really good, and we can get some distribution out there for the third magazine. I think, you know, once we have the third magazine and we have a lot more in our, you know, magazine portfolio to be able to be a little bit more proud about. I really like two. You know, two was good. Two set the standard. One was like a tester, like, yes, we can do this. Two was like, well, we can do this, but we can also do it properly. And three should be, you know, a combination of both of those things, I guess.
We can do it properly and be entertaining at the same time.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, that's one of the things, is we never really take ourselves seriously. And I do say that in a good way. So if you have any kind of suggestion, well, if you have any experience with the new Ubuntu, then email us in and we can read out those things. If you have any kind of stories or something that you've seen,
especially if it's Ubuntu related hackery, that's always good.
Yeah. I mean, I've got I bought myself an EPC a month ago, and that's been good fun. It's been really cool. It's a nice little device. It's very, very portable. Downsides: battery life isn't too great.
Apparently, it has a really loud fan. Is that right?
The fan is loud-ish compared to standard bigger laptops. Yes.
Because someone I know of said that they got an EPC and stuck it in an oven to try and make it overheat.
Okay.
Don't ask me why, but they just did.
That's a silly thing to do, unless you've got loads of money to burn, or your or your Metatron. the fan is loud because it has to work harder, because there's less space. And I'm sure you know, if you've ever done physics or chemistry, you know, the smaller the space, the hotter you'll get, and all the shit. So the less surface area,
small things heat up quickly.
Yeah, exactly, because of the surface area. Whereas if you've got a big laptop, well, not a big laptop, but if you've got a standard size laptop with a standard size keyboard, you'll find that the CPU is usually in the middle of the keyboard, and it has like a massive heat sink and a big copper, three or two copper pipes that go off to the left hand side where the fan is usually placed. The fan doesn't always run, but it runs when it needs to, and it runs slowly, and it's kind of like a big plastic thing that just kind of moves air around to cool that heat sink down, which works pretty well. The copper will take all that heat off the CPU, so it's got a bigger surface area to cool itself down, so obviously the fan has to work harder, and that's probably why it's a little bit noisier. Nevertheless, the EPC version 1 has already the smaller the shit, the hotter it gets. Yeah, that's basically what it is. My education was not wasted. I did Thank you for those comments from IRC. The new version of the EPC is coming out really soon, or it has already come out, I'm not sure. It will be much faster, it will have more space internally, it will have a bigger screen, it will have a full size how many inches was it? Seven and a half or 8 inches. I remember saying that to somebody at work, and I'm like, what? You think that's big? my screen is like 24 inches. You have to understand it within the reason of the of the concept of the EPC. Yes, it is quite large, being that the other one is like 4 inches in size, which is incredibly frustratingly small. But I have Ubuntu running on it, and I have managed to get upgraded graphics card drivers for it, which means that you can get the res up to 1,000 by whatever. And you can,
bloody hell!
Yeah,
1,000. Shit.
No, it's like, I think, yeah, it's the one just above 800 by whatever.
Jesus Christ, that's quite a high for a small screen.
It's not bad.
Can you read anything?
You can. I've had to shrink the text size down to 8 px or whatever it is. I've had to shrink those, you know, the top and bottom bars down. I've had to make the bottom bar auto hide, So it just goes away when you don't need it, because you don't really need it if you... It's just the open windows that's there. You maximize, minimize them as you need. I've got Compiz running on there. I've got the bloody cube and all the reflections and all the fire and all those kind of shit. You know, it works fine. It doesn't lag. It doesn't stall or anything. It just runs quite smoothly. You could have VLC in the background playing a movie or whatever. You know, that's fine. I've got a 16 bloody gig memory card in that. I didn't know that it went up to 16, which is quite impressive. Is it 16 or 64? No, it's 16. That makes more sense. 64 would be too big.
64 what? Sorry, I don't understand.
Gig. The micromedia card.
Oh, right, yeah, yes. Yeah. 64 gig would be quite a big micromedia card.
Would be quite insane, yes. Because
I had one of those.
Because they were selling a solid-state... memory device on eBay or something. I saw it.
SSD or something.
Yeah, it was a solid state, basically like a memory card, but it had the capacity of 120 gigs, which today...
That's an SSD.
Yeah.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, which today isn't a lot, but for solid state is.
The solid state, that's fucking huge!
And it was going for somewhere in the region of £300.
That's cheap, actually, for that much.
Yeah. I might think about looking into something like that. Obviously not. I'm going to pay £300 for 120 gigs, where I could just get 128 gigs worth of hard disk, and it'd be much cheaper. It would like.
You could just get a laptop hard drive, and
exactly.
It uses quite a lot more power up, and it's less secure. Going back to a conversation we were having many, many, many episodes ago. Which is a thought, actually. I did read over that quite recently and think, we could actually try and get a disc for review, possibly. Mm-hmm. Which would be quite fun.
Yes.
Reverse. Anyway, I didn't say that.
I mean, a good thing about the solid-state stuff, like, you know, you could have 128 gigs worth of solid-state, is that, like you said, takes less power to power it. It's more secure. And it's just so much more lighter. There's no moving parts, so it shouldn't really go wrong. And it should last about as much as a hard disk should last. I mean, now that the...
Possibly even longer, given it's got no moving parts.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, it might be cool for something like a really mobile device that needs to log loads of stuff. Maybe a automated picture type thing that stores images over a period of time, and you need to be able to bash it about a bit or something like that. So, you know, the kind of the concept utilization is quite wide, I'd say.
Yes. And it'll be pretty damn good for a little hack top.
Yes, exactly, yeah.
Since you could wipe the entire thing completely securely in microseconds.
Yeah. Because when you do delete something off... off one of these little flash things, they do actually get deleted. Unless, of course, it goes into a trash can, you know, or you've got something on the operating system.
Well, as long as the port, file system is right, you don't... If the file system, when you delete a file, you just change the header, obviously the data will still be there.
Yeah.
But if you zero it, then it will gone. It'll be gone completely.
Yes. Yeah. So
just deleting something wouldn't necessarily mean it's completely gone, but if you really want to delete something forever, you can.
Yeah.
Which is pretty cool.
Yeah. And that's quite useful. What else is there to talk about? Oh, yeah, of course, you know, not forgetting the fact that, as we mentioned before, InfoSec has come and gone.
I was about to remind you about that.
Yes. I was there on the first day. I met up with a few people that are regular to 2600. One of these is Napster. Aid was there. Who else was there? A few other people that I don't really need to mention their names. I think Bob Plonker was there. Who else?
Yep, he was. There's evidence
Glenn
on the Inquirer.
Oh, really? Okay. Glenn was there and like that. So, general impressions of InfoSec. I am meant to write a blog about this, and I think it may be a little bit too late to blog about it, but I just want to put some stuff down. it's not as good as maybe previous years. There weren't as many free things. It was quite hot in there, though. We did notice some improvements. Me and someone else managed to get into... Okay, Funsox, he allows me to call by that name. went up into the press bit that they have, which was quite nice because you got free... free coffee and stuff like that, and had a quick chat. What else? I mean, all the companies, there was nothing really new there. You know, as far as technology goes, everybody was selling roughly the same thing, and just different brands, or different things called different things, different ways. You had AV companies, you had, you know, filtering companies, you had this and that, and nothing was inspiring. The best thing I saw there was an old World War II German Enigma machine, which Thales had on their stand, which was really cool. And me and Funsox went up. I spotted it, and we went up and said, "You know, that's cool. Is it real?" And they're like, "Yeah, it's real." So we had a little kind of go on it, and they allowed us to encrypt a four-letter word and then decrypt it and stuff like that, and just play around with it and play around
nice.
with the wheels and stuff like that, and it was really cool and it worked really well. And
that four-letter word.
It wasn't
fun. Did it start with an F?
No, it was quite funny because she was like, "Well, think of a four-letter word and please don't." Think of a rude word, and they were like, it was like you could actually tell that.
Oh, that's difficult.
Exactly. And then she was like, maybe work. Oh, yeah, work. I don't know if Funsox was the first one to have it say, but whatever. We came up with a GP rated four-letter word. So it was cool. That's the first time I ever got to touch one of those things. I read a lot about them. I saw loads of pictures of them, but I've never seen one in working order. And I learned something as well. I didn't know that they had those things in production and a world patent prior to the war. I think, definitely a good few years before the war, they were used in the finance industry to encrypt, financial information across the wire or whatever. So that was quite interesting to find out. So, you know, that technology was available and it was known. So, that was quite interesting. And she talked to us a little bit about Bletchley Park and stuff like that and the way that the guys managed to decode that stuff. And, you know, I'm frankly just, you know, really impressed by the work of those, mathematicians and all the people that used to work there. And speaking of Bletchley Park, I read somewhere a couple of months back that they have officially opened the Bletchley Park Museum. And you can go in there and you can see the British... I think it was called Colossus, the computer that was responsible.
They blew up.
Yeah, that was responsible for decoding those messages. And after the war, they destroyed it. They destroyed all of the equipment. Don't know why, but they destroyed it.
They didn't want anyone else getting their hands on it, presumably.
I guess, you know, but it's like...
There's no real explanation out
there. No, there isn't. I mean, because it's like, well, it's been done now. We've won the war, so why don't we just keep it in, I don't know, secure storage until maybe 40 years down the line we might want to release it? Because, like, you know, by that time, computers would have advanced so much that you could simulate this thing in a fucking... on your phone, basically. You know, I was saying to Funsox or whoever when I was there, I don't know if it was him, but I said, you know, my phone can do... a million times more better encryption than the Colossus thing can do. You know, it's got like SSL 250 encryption.
Actually, I did find somewhere about people doing benchmarks on Colossus or didn't someone hang on a second? Didn't someone recreate it?
Yes, they emulated it on i386.
Yeah, but somebody actually remade the actual machine, didn't they?
Yes, that's right. And it's at the museum in Bletchley Park.
Yeah. Ah, yes. Cool. Because I was reading about people doing benchmarks and seeing which one they emulated,
yeah.
Or rather, they wrote a program to do the cracking stuff,
yeah.
On a general purpose PC, and looked at how fast it was, and it was quite interesting. Apparently, I can't remember what exactly happened, but the general purpose PC wasn't actually that much better,
yeah.
Than Colossus.
Well, that's
or something
because
like that.
Colossus was its only purpose in life was to do this. So it would make sense that a machine that is only designed to be able to decode this stuff is going to be faster than the machine that's also designed to read keyboard inputs, mouse movements, VGA, all this kind of shit, you know, isn't going to be as fast as that, if you see what I mean. That makes a lot more sense to me because, you know, if you had a vacuum cleaner that could also fly, it might not be as good as a vacuum cleaner that can just clean, well, not a vacuum, yes. If that makes sense. But yeah.
Apparently, according to the BBC, it says a virtual Colossus written to run on a Pentium 2 takes about the same time to break it as Colossus does, which is quite interesting. I mean, admittedly, that is a Pentium 2 and it's not that fast,
exactly.
But still,
yeah.
The technology in a Pentium 2 is far, far better than,
oh, yeah.
Or advanced than the stuff in Colossus, and yet it's still.
Well,
works at about the same speed.
Yeah,
which is quite amazing.
It depends, you know, how was the thing coded? You know, if you did it hardware coded into the actual processor, it would probably be 10 times faster, but maybe because it's just software running on top.
Well, you can't really code something into the processor. I mean, you run code on the processor.
I mean, design the processor to function like Colossus.
Oh,
like,
well, yeah, I suppose so. If you I don't know, made all the logic gates that the thing used on an FPGA or something, yes, I imagine that would be a lot faster.
Yeah, yeah. So, we're nearly coming to the end of the show.
Damn it!
Yes.
I've got loads of stuff I want to talk about.
Okay, well, go ahead then.
Okay, well, here's a quick one to start off with. The BT Home Hub thing.
Yes.
Did you see that, Bill Isles?
No, I'm not aware of this.
Ah, the default BT Home Hub keys. As you may have noticed through war driving and all that kind of stuff, that the BT Home Hubs and also Skyboxes and some other stuff, Thompson routers, I can't remember who gives them out, but anyway, they have in their SSID by default, they have a key at the end of it, like SpeedTouch F8A3D0.
Not really a key, it's just a like a PEX code.
Yes, it's a code of some description which gets generated. They also, on the back of them, they have stickers that say what the WEP and WPA keys are. And as it turns out, all of these things are, in the case of the Thompson routers, they're all derived from the serial number, all of them.
Wasn't by any chance something that Napalm would have told you, or...
No, came up on the IRC.
Okay.
It's on GNUcitizen.org.
Interesting, because this is something, I don't know if I'm even allowed to say this on air, but it's something that Napalm was working towards being able to reverse.
Ah, yes. Well, apparently someone else was working
got
on
there
it.
There first. Exactly, that's what
yeah,
I was saying
much.
Earlier.
a lot of people had the idea that all three of the things were related, but I don't think anyone... Well, people have obviously been working on it, but these people obviously went public first.
Yeah.
There's also the Skyboxes as well, which are on a different... using a different system, I guess, which I want to look into as well. But basically, you've got the serial number, and then you take out the production values, like the... I think it's the codes that say where it was manufactured.
Yeah.
Then you turn some values into hex, and then you SHA1 hash them.
Okay.
And then the last three bytes get converted into a six-byte string, so basically a string of hex, and then that gets stuck on the end of the SSID.
Okay.
And then the first bytes get turned into a 10-byte string, which becomes the WEP key, or WPA key.
Right, interesting.
Exactly the same thing works for the BT home hubs, except they only have four characters at the end. And the interesting thing is, if you look through it backwards, if you go through all the possible serial numbers that it could be, given the last four digits or whatever of the SSID, you can actually very easily reduce the number of keys that it is possible for it to be by a lot.
Yeah.
For example, you get a BT home hub, you get the last four digits, stick it into your lookup table, and all of a sudden you only have 80 keys to choose from, which you can very, very easily brute force in a matter of seconds.
Yeah. Interesting.
So you don't even have to break the WEP key. Yeah. It's that bad.
So basically it's been done. It's broken their attempt to secure these boxes further.
Hello?
Yes? Hello? Can you hear me?
Yes.
Good.
Well, I'm there.
Yes. I don't know. Yeah, I was saying their attempt to secure these boxes further by actually not forcing, but installing default encryption into these things with a WEP key that's put on a WPA key that's put on a sticker on the back of the box has been flawed, and people can get back into them by doing this, which is cool. I'm going to have to read up on this because it's an interesting thing, and it's something that I know somebody was working on, and I've been thinking about it, but I've not really invested any time in looking into it. So it's something I'm going to take a look at because it could be.
I've just pasted the link for that into the IRC, in case anyone else hasn't found it, which most people have.
Yeah. That could be a source of much pure ownage.
Yes, quite. I mean, just walking around, I found about seven BT home hubs.
Yeah. So. Doing a quick war drive with my missus a couple of months back, we found over 400 different access points, which most of them were secured, but most, if not all of them, like 90% of all of them, were these access points with the kind of hex serial at the end of them. So it's amazing to see how many, you know, skyboxes, BT home hubs, speed touches, which is what I have, and it has the same system like that, except I've changed it from the default one because I just thought it wasn't that secure, even though it seems to be quite secure, but obviously now isn't. So it's always good to be a little bit more paranoid than you think.
Defaults are never a good idea.
No. Even when the best intentions are used. So what else do we have?
Let's see, I was going to say something about iWAR as well.
Yep.
iWAR is a Unix war dialing piece of software written by Beav from various places. Let's see. I'll just paste the link for that into the IRC in case nobody's seen that before, which they probably have. It's very easy to get to. You just put iWAR into Google. but it looks like, to me, the only Linux or Unix-based war dialer that actually works, as far as I can tell.
Well, that's
takes a bit of wrangling with to get it to work, in my experience. It supports modems as well as VoIP.
Cool.
Which is really cool.
Yeah, yeah.
And as far as I can tell, that's the only war dialer full stop that supports VoIP, which is really cool. It does it using IAX, which is a pretty good protocol to be using. SIP's a complete pain in the ass. Works really well if you've got an asterisk box on your network, which I just so happen to, or if you have a VoIP provider, which allows you to do IAX connections, like, I don't know, Free World Dial-Up or VoIP User, In the UK, which is really good because they give you free phone calls on the condition that you make use of a 0845 number for a bit. But if you give the occasional donation, they don't mind too much. And basically, you just use it like a normal wall dialer. It goes through all the different numbers in random order or sequential order, logs it to a text file, and does all sorts of cool stuff. When you're using a modem, it does carrier detection and all that normal kind of war dialery type things that you would expect it to do. It has an ASCII curses GUI for you to use, which is really cool. When you're using VoIP, however, it doesn't do any tone detection or any kind of classification. You just have to listen out for stuff. If it dials up and you hear a carrier tone, then you can press a button and mark it as a carrier tone or something like that. Apparently there is a idea in the pipeline to actually get some DSP on it and get it right. to do carrier detection over VoIP as well, which is interesting. Also might be something to link up with IAX modem, which looks pretty damn cool too, which allows you to do modem stuff over IAX too,
right?
Which makes for interesting possibilities.
Yeah, certainly. Yeah.
I've written a quick tutorial on how to get it running. Actually, I wrote the tutorial with the 0.07 result release in mind. However, after talking to Beav, he has suggested that I use the 0.08 CVS snapshot instead because it's much better, and I would have to agree it is a lot better. In the 0.8 release, there's lots of different things that work better. Using IAX Client 2 also is it's much more comprehensible and it actually works better. Also, you can mark things as different things, like in the previous version you just pressed M to mark and space to skip, but now you can mark things as a modem or a carrier or whatever, or trunk.
Okay.
Anything you like, which is kind of handy, especially when you go to look at the results afterwards, and especially if you're doing a couple of hundred numbers, which is pretty cool. And yeah, it's a nice toy to play with, and if you're into the sort of freaking things, then give it a go.
Yeah, definitely. Freaking isn't dead.
No, not at all.
No. Okay, we're going to have to round it up fairly soon because my laptop battery is dying, so I'd like to be able to not cut the show off. So do you want to end it here? And then I can upload.
Yeah, sure.
Cool, okay. Well, if you have any comments, suggestions, or any other kind of news, or any kind of fun facts, or whatever that you'd like us to read out, please email radio@hackervoice.co.uk, and that will get straight through to us. irc.hackervoice.co.uk on port 6667, or the encryption SSL you could also use if you wanted to. And also forms.hackervoice.co.uk is the place to get in touch with pretty much everyone. Bromcom is coming up soon. I will announce the dates, unless you don't already know them, I guess the next show.
Isn't Bromcom this Friday?
Is it? Oh, okay. Well, it's happening this Friday, so I guess I'll...
Hang on, I don't know that for sure.
No? Okay, it may not be happening. Well, look it up on Bromcom. Brumcon.brum.brummybrum.com or whatever it is, their website.
Dot Brum. Brum2600.net.
Yeah, that's the one. So, we'll see you all next time. Don't know when the next time will be, but hopefully soon, as we'll be getting back in the rhythm of things. Thanks for listening to another episode of Hacker Voice Radio. Hope to see you again sometime soon.
Goodbye.
Bye-bye.